And welcome. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse, inviting you to join us once again for another edition of the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We have many hundreds of shows available for you on all kinds of topics in natural health and natural living. And I only recently found out, because I got a new phone, and all of a sudden there's something that probably most of you know, which right in the phone, when you open it, there's a little square that says podcasts. So I clicked on that, and then I just looked up the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. I just typed that in. And also another show that Dr. Zamperone and I do called Herbally Yours. And both of those shows popped up, and all I had to do was press once, and somehow then it's actually a podcast that you can listen to anytime, day or night. And I'm sure a lot of you, this isn't news, but to me, it was news. That's probably why we have so many listeners. I mean, really hundreds of thousands of people all over the world can tune in, listen to us live or on the archive. Of course, on the archives, we have live links to all of our guests, topics that they discussed, and we will be doing the same with our guest today, who I'll be introducing in a little while. But first, I wanted to bring your attention to all the events at naturalnurse.com. That's where we list our events. We also have Instagram and this, that, and the other thing, but I really like to have a full schedule right on the website where we have room to describe all the classes, because I notice on Instagram, although we posted there, it goes away. I don't know how all that works, but nonetheless, on naturalnurse.com, under classes and events, you'll see all, not the private. We have lots of other privates, like for instance, people who are starting a project of selling herbal remedies. I highly suggest that you know before you go. So I would say that's one of our biggest things that we do, is teach about herbal manufacturing legal considerations, because unfortunately many people get in touch after they have been contacted by the FDA or the FTC because they said something like echinacea cures colds. And actually that's scientifically valid. It is shown to increase white blood cell motility and have other kinds of actions that can be really useful if you have that kind of infection. Yet, it's illegal for you to say that if you are selling a product that contains echinacea. Maybe you didn't know that. And guess what? Not knowing does not get you out of a lawsuit with the FDA and FTC. They will win unless you have very deep pockets. And they have gone to people's houses. They have confiscated the little herbal echinacea bottles that they've created, or creams. Then people often have the mistaken belief that if they make these herbal products into a salve or a topical, that they're off the hook. That is not the case. All the cosmetic rules have just been increased recently. So basically, I would say no before you go. I would say the best choice, truthfully, is not to start a company where you're making herbal products to sell them. It's really not a good idea unless you have very, very deep pockets to invest. If not, find some other very wonderful, natural career path that you can follow. So we have a course called Career Paths in Natural Health, where we talk you through what would be the best training to do. Let's say you do want to do herbal consultations. That's different than selling herbal products. So you see, there's a lot to learn, and we have many, many individualized classes available. And then we also have group classes. So at naturalnurse.com events, right now we have some that are coming up soon. One is August 6th, and that's where we'll go deeply into information about olive and oregano, because both olive leaf and olive oil are highly medicinal. Why can I say that? Because I'm not selling you any products. I'm giving information, which is a different set of rules. So you can take that class, super inexpensive, Olive and Oregano from Ancient Mythology to Modern Scientific Scrutiny. And if you are any kind of health professional, you can get 3 CE credits. So you can get 3 CE credits if you're a nurse, a midwife, a massage therapist, an acupuncturist, an RD, or a clinical nutritionist. If you take this class, you get 3 CE units. If you're just interested and you're not a health professional with one of those degrees, you can just take the class and you can get a certificate also of completion after you've taken the class. So that's at Olive and Oregano from Ancient Mythology to Modern Scrutiny. And if you are not available the day that we're doing the class, once you sign up, then you get access to the archives. And that you can visit and take the class basically anytime you want and still get the 3 CEUs. So we have all of those listed at Natural Nurse Academy as well. Then, if you want to come and be with Dr. Zamperone and I in person, we have on September 16th our Autumn Wild Edible and Herb Identification Walk at Restoration Farm. And we had a class there last week where we went out and gathered wild plants and made them into medicine. And the only problem was it was completely sold out. And there were a lot of people there waiting online to see if they could get in last minute. So these things do sell out. So if you're interested, go to naturalnurse.com, go to the events class page and see what we have. We also have an herb walk and medicine making funk shop, and that's at Gilberti's Farm in Connecticut. So you can come to that area. That one, we're going to go out and gather plants and make them into medicine. And we only do that class up in Connecticut once a year. So if you want to come with us, that's a good day. Then we have one on herbs for eye health and electromagnetic field deflection. Are you in front of a computer screen a lot? Well, you should know which herbs are protective against that blue light. And in general, what herbs are excellent for both protecting your vision and improving your vision. So we have a class on that, which also has 3 CEUs for all health professionals. And that one, by the way, is free. Herbs for Eye Health and Electromagnetic Field Deflection is being hosted by the American Herbalist Guild, and that is totally free to sign up. If that one, it's free if you watch it live. If you don't watch it live, then it's free if you are a member of the American Herbalist Guild, which is also a wonderful organization to join. But you can just watch this free if you join us live. So you can sign up at naturalnurse.com events. And then Dr. Zamperone and I on October 1st, we're taking people to Chinatown in New York City. People actually fly in from all over the place to join us. That'll be our walk, last one, because then I head back to Florida. You know, we're talking October 1st. It's getting a little crispy. The leaves are starting to change color. That's when the natural nurse heads back to Florida. But that day, we will be in Chinatown, where we walk around, and it's like going to another country. We go to apothecaries, we learn about Chinese medicine, we do Qigong in the park in Chinatown. It's a wonderful day, and that is the fall season Chinatown Herb Walk Tour in New York City that always sells out. If you're thinking of coming, now's the time to register. We have a few places left. And then we have another class on ear infections, natural support, how to get ready for the fall and winter season and have things available in your house in case you or any child, you know, or anyone you know gets any kind of ear infection. There are some really excellent, excellent natural therapeutics that you will learn about in that class. And then on November 12th, we have an FDA FTC regulation update in terms of herbal manufacturing and what you need to know if you're going to do that. And then we take people to the island of Jamaica once a year, and that's happening next March, which is called an Echo Tour for Cures, the education vacation in the island of Jamaica, and that's coming up in 2024. We've done it every year. I believe that'll be the 40th Yes, that's right. 40th year that we lead that class. So join us for any of those things or more. We're always adding new classes there. And of course, you can always join our mailing list and get a heads up about what we're doing next. And the best place to go for all of that is naturalnurse.com. And we have archives to all of our wonderful shows there as well. Today, we are so happy to bring on board as our guest, Reverend Dr. Shannon Sterringer. She is the founding pastor of the community of St. Hildegard Church and Hildegard House, which is a shrine in Fairport Harbor, Ohio. Shannon is a wife and mother, a published author, a small business owner, as well as an amateur beekeeper. And she is an ordained priest and has traveled to Bingen, Germany several times over the last few years to walk in the footsteps of Hildegard of Bingen for research and professional development. And Shannon has offered numerous retreats, seminars, and workshops on various topics in Hildegard studies, her herb societies, churches, spiritual centers, and day-long seminars at the seminary in Hyderabad, India, where I have never been. So we also have lots of other classes on Hildegard, which you can find at Natural Nurse Academy. And thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Shannon.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, good. We can hear you really, really well today. And what did you do? I know with the class that I went to that you gave was so beautiful. And it was about Hildegard, but it's certainly focused on herbs. So that's where I was influenced by seeing your work. And there's many, many aspects of Hildegard. What first brought you to study her?
So Hildegard is what we would refer to as a polymath. So she was she was 12th century German Benedictine, and she embodied many different gifts and talents, and left us today. We're still digging through really just the treasure of writings and works that she left. And she was a musician as well as a theologian and a homilist. She was a preacher. She traveled. She was an abbess. She was a politician, a philosopher. But she was a visionary, but she was also a master herbalist, what we would call master herbalist today. And in her day, she really was probably functioned more as a medical doctor, because she definitely seemed to be using the medicine of her day. I do not have a background in medicine. I am a theologian by training. As you mentioned, I'm an ordained minister and I've ordained priest, and I've spent many years in theological schools. But in 2010, one of the, so I have two doctorates. I have a doctor of ministry from the diocesan local seminary, and then I also have a PhD, but I did the doctor of ministry program first. And in that dissertation, I looked at a historical overview of the many different ways women have functioned in leadership roles, especially in Roman Catholicism over the last 2,000 years. And while doing that research, I came across Hildegard. I had never heard of her. This was probably 2009, maybe 2010. And I fell in love with her. And so once I completed the historical survey, I then went on to engage in a PhD program focusing simply on Hildegard, or exclusively on Hildegard. So I was first drawn to her in part because she was so multifaceted. There's something in Hildegard for everybody, religious or not. But I first was drawn to her because my background's in leadership. And so I was the PhD that I completed was in ethical and creative leadership. And Hildegard emerged for me as a model of a medieval female leader, and one that has many leadership skills we could really be applying today, men and women. And as part of the whole process, I founded a retreat center here in Fairport Harbor in 2016 in Hildegard's charism, with interest in bringing her charism, her creativity, just the different ways that I feel she can help people grow in mind, body, and spirit to the wider community. And so as part of that, we started to offer programs with different aspects of creativity, painting, music, art, writing, things like that. And of course, the herbs, because herbal medicine is a big part of Hildegard. When I discerned the path to follow my call to ordained ministry, which was between 2018, 2019, I took a 9-month sabbatical to discern that. And while on sabbatical, I spent a good part of that time in a good friend of mine, Lynn Abbey. She owns an herbal store here in Northeast Ohio in Willoughby called Blue Lake Botanicals. So I spent a good part of my sabbatical helping her out in the herb store there, and just learning a little bit more about the herbs, since it was such a significant part of Hildegard's writings and an area in Hildegard that I had the least amount of exposure to. And I also learned to make many herbal products and things like that while I was there on sabbatical. But then I just became really invested in Hildegard and herbs. So here at the Hildegard House, the shrine that I mentioned, that I founded in 2016, we have beautiful herb gardens. We have all different culinary and medicinal herbs growing that one can find if they go through the works of Saint Hildegard that she used herself for different healing reasons. And that's so one of the most, I as you mentioned, I have been invited to lead retreats and talk seminars on all different topics in Hildegard. But one of the more popular and fun topics is Hildegard as the medieval herbalist.
Well, that's a beautiful introduction, both to yourself and to your work with Hildegard. I want to remind our listeners, we are talking about a woman. We are talking about a nun. We are talking about someone who lived in the 12th century. I mean, that is, it's not like the 1800s. I mean, we're talking about so like a different world. So, of course, when we talk about herbalism, it's not like that's herbalism or pharmaceutical drugs. There were no pharmaceutical drugs even invented.
Correct. And there is, so in 2017, as you mentioned, I've been to Germany many times since 2015 for research and professional development. But in 2017, I had an opportunity to go down for 2 visits in the southern part of Germany, right on the border of Lake Constance in Germany and Switzerland, and visit the Hildegard Praxis that is operated by Dr. Vigard Strehlo. So Dr. Vigard Strehlo, I believe he might be retired now or getting close to retiring, but at the time I was able to still visit with him. He had this beautiful clinic where he was using or applying Hildegard's medicine today. So, you know, he was taking what she prescribed in the 12th century and pulling from that, at least what was able to be pulled from that, and applying it to his clients and his patients today. So that was a wonderful experience.
And he wrote a book about her protocols.
He did. He wrote several books in English. I believe there are 3. He has quite a few more in German, but he wrote one on Hildegard's medicine, it's called. And then he wrote a small little book on the healing power of spelt. He's a big advocate for spelt as a grain. So was Hildegard. And so even though it's not a gluten-free grain, but it certainly seems to be healthier and processed differently by our bodies than wheat. And then he also has a book called Hildegard of Bingen Spiritual Remedies, where he connects holistically the physical ailments that we experience with maybe spiritual or emotional problems we might be having.
Which is all the rage right now. So look, when she was describing this, that's what blows me away about her too. I mean, so multifaceted, so eclectic, and being a woman in her day and really having a lot in her writings that you might call, you know, strong feminism if it was today.
Exactly. She was definitely a strong female leader. She was a bit limited, you know, in terms of her culture and the time, you know, that she lived And you know, I think to by today's standards, we wouldn't necessarily maybe call her a feminist by today's standards, but for her day, she was most definitely, I would say, of operating from a feminist place. She was a not only, as I said, not only a healer and a preacher and a abbot. Well, she really wasn't an abbess, but she was the leader of her community. But she also was a politician, and she we have a large body of letters that she left, that she had corresponded with popes and abbots and emperors. She corresponded with the Emperor Frederick Barbarossa, and so she was strong.
Right, and her work did create change too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Which is amazing, really. And another factoid about her, you know, it's sort of endless. And of course, that's why we're doing our show today, because we're both so enamored with her and her work, both in herbalism and as a person. You know, she did so much work as a musical composer, just an endless array of really, really interesting creative work. But she was able to make men that were in charge change rules.
Yes, and change their minds. So for example, Hildegard was tied to a male Benedictine monastery when she was 8 years old. She probably didn't actually enter the monastery until she took her final vows around maybe between ages 14 and 16, but she was tied at age 8. And so she spent the first 20, 25, maybe 30 years of her life in this male Benedictine monastery. And then she had, as I said, she was a visionary. And so she had a vision that she was being called to move her sisters to their own monastery and build their own space. And initially, the abbot said no, because, you know, the women that were joining or were being tithed or offered to the male Benedictine monastery were also coming with their dowries. So the dowries that their families would have set aside for marriage would have now gone to the monastery. And so there was a financial interest in keeping the women at Dissi Bodenberg. And also pilgrims would come, you know, to either to seek religious advice or something like that. But they might also come to the infirmary, you know, if Hildegard's reputation was such that, you know, there was a possibility to be healed there. And so they didn't want to lose the pilgrims either that would have been coming. But she was persistent, and she took to her sick bed for a while. She wrote many letters to men in high places, and she secured a benefactor that would, you know, help her, or you know, somebody that would give her a piece of land. And so she was able to get all the pieces in place, and then eventually she did receive permission to move her sisters out, and they built their own monastery at Rupertsburg.
Now, is that monastery still standing? Was that a place you were able to visit?
So there's not much existing at Rupertsburg. Now, Dissi Bodenberg, the first monastery, is gorgeous. Many of the ruins are still there. Not only the infirmary, there's several, all four walls really are still existing at the infirmary. The ceilings or the roof is gone, but the walls are in very good shape. And other parts of the space, including the women's quarters. Rupertsburg, on the other hand, which was the first monastery that she built on the corner of the Na and Rhine River, no longer exists. There are a few underground tunnels which have been preserved. And so you are, you know, at different times able to go in there, and they've renovated them. And sometimes they offer little classes on Hildegard or a prayer service or something like that in those tunnels. So that exists. But then across the river, about 15 years after she founded the monastery at Rupertsburg, which was always her main monastery, she founded a second monastery across the Rhine River in Eibingen. And that monastery, the building itself was destroyed in the early 1900s by fire. But the today there's a parish church that is on that grounds. And so the space still exists. It's been rebuilt, obviously, and that's where her reliquary is at. But then up the hill from that parish church is the new Benedictine monastery, and that's where the it's the Abbey of St. Hildegard, and that's where the Benedictine sisters live today, and where a lot of the work's being done on her writings, especially her visionary writings.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that, Dr. Shannon. Now we're going to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And when we come back, we will continue our discussion about Hildegard with Reverend Dr. Shannon Sterringer. And I do want to tell you, you may want to take a look at her beautiful website. One is called thegreenshepherdess.org, and another one about the church that she runs called Hildegard House, and it's spelled H-A-U-S in typical great German style, hildegardhouse.org. So we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Thank you so much for joining us. And we are here today with our wonderful guest, Dr. Shannon Sterringer, and she's talking to us about Hildegard, Hildegard de Bingen. Do you say, Dr. Shannon, do you say Hildegard of Bingen or de Bingen? Because I've seen it both ways.
I normally say of, that's the English, but you could say either or. I've had publishers put it both ways in the same text. So kind of covering all the bases, I think it's just whatever your preference is.
So one wonderful thing about a deep dive into her herbal practice, which of course was medical at that time, that's what the medicine was about. And she also really offered it more as a spiritual healing from what I read than saying that she's necessarily a doctor. Although she did also wind up being a recognized scientist in Germany.
Right. So the interesting thing about her two work, it's, they began as one work and they were split over time. But the two works that we have today on her natural medicine are Physica and then Causes and Cures. Physica is probably the most popular, but it's thought that both of those were together at one time as one text. But the interesting, there has been quite a bit of controversy over the years if in fact those were authentically Hildegard's, because the writing style is a bit different, where she's not claiming in the same way it coming completely through divine revelation as she does with some of her other texts, which has brought, I think, and I'm going to just speak in general here, the general, I think, consensus right now is that they are authentically Hildegard's, but the reason the style of writing is different from her other texts is because they may have been her notes, like a collection of her notes that she used in the infirmary while she was alive and while she was functioning. And then after her death, compiled into the book. And so that has, because there's so much of the language that's very Hildegardian, if you call it that. And so it definitely seems to be her work, even though it's a different style than her other texts. So what we probably have, as you said, she was a doctor in her day. What we probably have is her collection of practical notes that she used while treating patients in the infirmaries.
But also, of course, she did all this work in German. She didn't write it in English.
She actually wrote it in Latin. So that's the thing. All of Hildegard's writings are in Latin. So
you know, I never knew that. That's a revelation.
Yes, everything was written in Latin. And so there are quite a bit more books available, even critical translations were available earlier on some of these texts in German than they were available to us in English. But she actually wrote everything in Latin.
Okay, that's really enlightening, because the reason a particular flavor might feel closer or less close to her original thinking is it's been through many translations then also, because it might have been translated from Latin to German and then to English, or from Latin
right.
to each of those things through different translators. So, you know, that there's always something that's changed or lost, but that's amazing. I actually thought she did her work in German, because one thing naturally is that one reason it's so wonderful that at Hildegard House, and that's HAUS.org, the plants that you're able to grow there, which you did reflectively on plants that she often used in her herbal, which was the medical practice of the day, would grow here because it's certainly a similar weather environment.
Yes, yeah, we have a similar growing zone. And what we've done here, we received a couple of grants over the last 2 years from the Federation of Christian Ministries, which has been wonderful because that's helped us to not only expand the herb gardens, but to put install signage out in the gardens that have the name of the herb and then where in Physica. Most of the herbs, Physica is more of an encyclopedia or a dictionary type of a text where you can look up fennel or parsley or whatever you're looking up. It has 9 chapters. 1 chapter is on plants. 1 chapter is on trees. So for the gardens here, most everything in them are cited either from the chapter on plants or the chapter on trees. But she also has a chapter on birds and air and water, and also a chapter on gemstones, because for Hildegard, gemstones grow from the earth just like the herbs, and they have medicinal properties and spiritual healing properties. And so in her work, she does include a chapter on gemstones as well. But where I was going with this is we were able to put signs out throughout the gardens where so that if somebody has a copy of Physica with them, they can actually sit with the plant, look it up, see what Hildegard had to say, and just spend some time reflecting on it.
And by the way, listeners, these are books that are available. I mean, you don't have to dig too deep to find these creations such as Physica, which is widely available. Is there one of the published versions that you find better than another?
Well, for Physica, Phyllis Throops, Throop, Priscilla, I'm sorry, Priscilla Throop, that's the best translation, critical translation that we have. Now you can get that on Amazon. That's the English translation. It's very easily accessible, as you said. But there is, if you Google Physica plants, there is a 1-volume book. Let me see if I have a copy of it here. I can tell you who edited or compiled it. You can find a link for a PDF of it online at no charge through one of the colleges has it available in their library.
Wow, I'm going right there after the show. So it's called Physica.
Yeah, this, and I'm happy to share. Actually, the name of the 1-volume book is Hildegard's Healing Plants from Her Medieval Classic Physica. Wow. And there is a PDF available for free online that you can read it online. I can send that link to you directly if you'd like me to do that, the website for this, who's published it.
That would be great. But, and if any listener wants to, they can reach out to me too. No, I said, yes, please do send me that link.
Take you to the website, and then you can download it from there. But the Physica is 9 chapters, and it's now that one. I don't know if it's the whole text is available by PDF, but you could definitely get that used.
Oh yeah, the book.
And
yeah,
the other distributors. Yeah,
right. I have that book. It's excellent. I mean, it's excellent. The protocols that she designed often combined, like you're saying, her first thing was not about a chemical that any plant specifically had or gemstone, but the spiritual.
Exactly. And so, and then that would bring us back to Dr. Vigard Strehlo. His book, Hildegard's Medicine, is also co-authored by his partner, who's deceased now, Dr. Hertzka, who was an MD, and they founded that clinic actually together. And then after Dr. Hertzka died, Dr. Strehlo continued it. But it's the Hildegard of Bingen Spiritual Remedies is a work only by Dr. Vigard Strehlo. And he does bring in, for his spiritual applications or emotional applications, he does bring in, Hildegard's writing, of course, primarily from her Causes and Cures text.
And the fact that mind-body medicine is now sort of all the rage, she was way ahead of her time.
Oh, absolutely. And she had this theological concept. I'm going to say theological, but it's really a holistically spiritual concept called viriditas. It's a Latin word which means greening power. And there's a beautiful quote from her that I think it's something to the extent of, there's a power in eternity and it is green. And for Hildegard, that greening power or that viriditas is not only physical. I mean, it is physical out in plants and nature and even in our own bodies if we're, healthy and moist and, green, but also spiritual and emotional. And so for Hildegard, if that viridity, if there's a viridity lacking in our lives for any reason, we're stressed out. She was religious, so she would say if you're living in a state of sin, or if there's, you're angry, whatever the situation might be, anything that would cause you to be unwell, emotionally or spiritually will also affect your viridity. And so viriditas for her was physical, but it was also emotional and spiritual. So it was a holistic understanding of this greenness. And for Hildegard, if any part of the whole is dry or lacking in viridity, it's going to affect the whole. And so, you know, the goal would be to bring that back into balance and restore that viridity.
And that also sounds so much like the precepts of Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine, when they're talking about, you know, enhancing the fluids in the body and that whole idea of balance.
Yes. And Hildegard used, you know, her medicine was kind of rooted in the ancient idea of four bodily humors. And, you know, she would have been using, again, that was the science of her day. And many people have mentioned that that system very much resembles what we would today refer, you know, what we know as Chinese medicine or Ayurvedic, as you mentioned.
Yeah, you're right. In fact, older Western medicine even discusses body types, such as ectomorph, mesomorphs, and endomorphs, which fits very closely to the ancient Chinese systems. But you don't see it discussed in today's Western medicine. That completely fell off the map. Like everybody, let's say my mom, who's 95 and weighs about 80 pounds, would get the same treatment for an issue as a man who's 250 pounds, 50 years old. I mean, there's no concept of, you know, a balance within the individual, which Hildegard's medicine did honor.
Right. And, you know, for Hildegard, something like ginger is very healthy and healing, but it's hot and it's energizing. So if you're suffering even emotionally from, you know, anxiety or something like that, probably want to stay away from ginger, even though ginger is a good thing, because she wouldn't prescribe an energizing hot herb for somebody who needs cooling and calming. And so she did try it. That comes out in her writings, like especially in Physica, when she's describing all of the herbs and plants and gemstones. She does describe whether they're moist or dry, hot or cold, you know, if they're energizing or calming, you know, because she would be looking at the person as a whole person and trying to balance all of that. So even though something's a good thing for a certain person, it might not be if they're out of balance in that direction.
Well, isn't that amazing that what a person that she was, and how does that, you know, some people may not understand what you brought up earlier, which is the concept of tithed. I mean, most Catholics will know what that means because they still do tithing today. But she, from what I learned, and you can correct me, was that she was offered to the monastery as a child because she was a 10th child, and you're supposed to tithe 1/10 of your riches to the church.
Right. And that comes out of the scriptures. And so, yes, when we say tithe, she was a 10th child, that would have been 1/10 of the family's children. But there are, you know, in her own writings, there are questions on whether she was tithe because of her being the 10th child and that obligation, or if it was because she seems to indicate that she had been experiencing visions from the time she was a child and also unusual or unexplained illnesses. And so she was special in that way. And her, you know, there are some stories, and this could be part of, you know, what developed around her hagiography or, you know, embellishing the story of this important person. But that, you know, from the time she was a child, some, you know, say that her family recognized she had special spiritual gifts. And so she was given to God or given to the monastery for that reason. But it was also in part practical that she was the 10th child. For women, especially, she was more of a, came from more of a noble caste or a little bit, you know, she wasn't at the top of the caste system, but she was definitely, you know, higher born. It sometimes being tied to a monastery was welcomed because the alternative was, you know, an arranged marriage, many times for political reasons or political ties between families, noble families. And so is, you know, is awkward as it sounds to us today to be tithed at such a young age, and she was tithed as an anchorite or like a you know, cloistered sister, which she didn't end up living in that way, we know, because she was out in the world in so many ways. But it seems, you know, it seems like an oppressive lifestyle for a woman, but it was actually in many ways liberating and freeing next to the alternative of being in an arranged marriage that I didn't want to be in.
But also,
because at least they had access to education. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, that's fine. But also, in terms of how old she lived, I mean, we're talking about 12th century here. People, if they got to 30, they're old.
Correct. So, yeah, she was born in 1098, and she died in 11, or it's believed she was born in 1098, and we know she died in 1179. And so she would have lived to be about 81 years old, and she spent the last few months of her life under an interdict. It's not quite as severe of a punishment as excommunication, but it's close.
And, oh, I didn't know that. So why did that happen?
Very long story short, she allowed the burial of a man in the monastery grounds who had been excommunicated. She had treated him in the infirmary, and she claimed that while in the infirmary, he was reconciled to the church. But at that time, you were not allowed to bury excommunicated people in consecrated ground. And so the bishops and the hierarchy wanted the body exhumed and moved from the consecrated ground, and Hildegard refused because, she said he had been reconciled. And her refusal, the story says, she even went out and disguised the grave so that they couldn't find the body and exhume it themselves, caused her to be placed under an interdict, which prohibited them from singing the Liturgy of the Hours, which is very important to Benedictine religious life. And also they couldn't receive communion. They were, basically just on punishment. They couldn't do anything that they normally did
that I never
sacramentally.
Heard. How interesting, because she was often doing things that seemed a little strange, like he even talked about her visions. I mean, there were people who were visionaries who were burned at the stake and not revered. So, that was another special thing about her as well.
Right. Now, she did get permission from Bernard of Clairvaux to begin writing. So, and she did it for that reason, because she to assume to write her visions down without permission from the hierarchy would have resulted in some sort of consequence, like you just mentioned. She did receive permission from Bernard of Clairvaux and also from Pope Eugenius III connected to that. And so she had the ability and the freedom to write. But this last incident with this and her refusal to obey the orders from the magisterium to exhume the body ended up, they ended up placing Hildegard and her whole convent under this interdict, which she responded to. One of the last letters we have from her, second to last, I think it is a long scathing letter to the bishops. For their, for their having done this unfairly and unjustly to the monastery. And then just shortly before she died, the interdict was lifted and then she died in good standing. But, to have died in the Middle Ages as a Catholic Benedictine nun without the sacraments was a pretty serious thing. It was a different culture.
Wow. So we're going to take another break right here. Dr. Shannon, fascinating, fascinating information about somebody who I totally revere and study deeply. And you gave us wonderful information about how to actually get her information for yourself. That book, Physica, is excellent. And there's other wonderful books about her mandalas. And we'll talk about some more of that when we come back. We're going to take a little break right here. So listeners, you can find out more about our host station right here, Progressive Radio Network. You can find us always at prn.live. So we will be right back with more. And we're back for last part of our show here on PRN.FM, and this is Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. I'd love to invite you to send in any of your questions or comments. Best way to do that is go to naturalnurse.com, or you can go to Facebook, The Natural Nurse, or Instagram, The Natural Nurse. We're all over the place. But I really still love that old-fashioned website because I'm old and old-fashioned, and also because we can put more data there and it stays in place. And another wonderful website you may want to visit is our guest website, Hildegard House, that's HAUS.org. And what do you have at the greenshepherdess.org, Dr. Staringer?
So the Green Shepherdess is a combination. I do have a blog on there that I use at times, but I also have a small fair trade store here in Fairport Harbor where I carry products from around the world that are come from different companies that are under the Fair Trade Federation. I also have a section of local art and local herbal products that other companies have produced. But then I also carry a section on Hildegard of Bingen. So I have a section with Hildegard's books and music and icons and pretty much anything you might be interested in with Hildegard here that's available in the US. And then I also have, I have a couple of my own books on Hildegard that I have available through there as well.
So that is absolutely fabulous. Now tell us about how you started a special church. I mean, who comes? Only people interested in Hildegard, or is it an open Catholic service? Or tell us about your church community.
So it's an open community. Some of the people, so we have two things going on really in the space. We have the Hildegard House, or the shrine, if you will, to St. Hildegard, which we've modeled after. It's a smaller version, but we've modeled it after Hildegard's shrine and gardens in Germany, so that people here in the U.S. can come and experience a bit of Hildegard's charism if they're not able to travel all the way to her land. So we have that piece. So I do host many retreats and talks and tours and private tours, as well as group events here for folks who just want to learn more about Hildegard or just have a love for Hildegard. The worship community that gathers here, we call ourselves the Community of St. Hildegard, but it's a Christian, what I would call an independent Catholic community, because we're not connected to the Diocese of Cleveland. Because the Roman Catholic Church does not recognize women's ordination. And so when I followed that call, it put me on the out. They actually I'm excommunicated because of it.
Wait a minute. Say that again. What did you say?
Oh, yes. I'm excommunicated because a woman who's ordained in the Roman Catholic tradition is automatically excommunicated.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Because the Roman Catholic Church does not recognize its ordination as valid. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's not even just still. It's actually going in reverse in terms of the penalties and the consequences.
Wow. So as a Jew, I did not know that. But I have to say, in different Jewish sects, women are also not at all included. So there's a whole war within Judaism as well, because we have Jewish rabbis now, but they are completely not recognized by the Orthodox community.
Right. So, yes. So the Roman Catholic Church, because it's so strongly governed by the magisterium, which goes, from the local diocesan bishops up through Rome to the Pope. If somebody breaks canon law, like I did, and is ordained and claims to be ordained within the Roman Catholic tradition, you're automatically excommunicated. So that's why I refer to us as an independent Catholic community, because I personally am excommunicated, but most of the people who gather here, and they gather both in person as well as on Zoom, we have a pretty large Zoom based community, consider themselves Catholic still. Most of them are either what we call cradle Catholics or lifelong Catholics, who have just reached a point where they want to live out their Catholic faith in a way that's more inclusive and more liberating, more open and just. And so that's the community that gathers here. We have a bit of a Hildegard flavor in a lot of our liturgies. We might incorporate some of her music or something like that, but the liturgies themselves are really focused in much the same way a Roman Catholic liturgy would be, on the scriptures and prayer and music that may or may not be connected with Hildegard.
Wow. The last show we did together, I never got some of that information. So I'm so happy we had a longer time to discuss it, because one thing that's wonderful is if people go to Hildegard House, that's Hildegard, Hildegard, HAUS.com, then they can actually sort of link to virtual services from wherever they are. How would they do that?
Correct. So if you go on our website, you can scroll down and it'll say upcoming events or something. I can't remember the exact language, but you'll see it says Sunday liturgy, and then it has the Zoom link available right there. I do have a book that I wrote. Well, I have two books. The one is called 30 Day Journey with St. Hildegard. And that's like a meditation book. So you could take that and sit with it. They're excerpts from her letters. And, you know, you could just sit and journey with Hildegard over the course of 30 days if that's beneficial to anyone. But then I have another book, which is a memoir called Forbidden Grace. And it weaves together my call and my journey to ordained ministry, including my excommunication, together with my relationship with Hildegard. So the chapters alternate, you know, there's a chapter on Hildegard's life and then mine and then Hildegard mine, et cetera. And so if, you know, that might be of interest to some of the listeners because you can get a good sense of who Hildegard was from the book, but also some of the journey that I've been through as a Catholic minister who worked for a Catholic parish for over 22 years and for the diocese, and now excommunicated and an independent Catholic pastor in another space. So.
But the church itself that you have is beautiful. You know, the actual building.
Thank you.
So how did that come to be?
So when I was working on my PhD in 2015, 2016, We put a bid on this property. The property was a Byzantine Catholic church built in 1926, and then it closed in 2012. So it had been empty for a few years. And so my family purchased it in 2016, and with the original intent of creating a retreat center based in the charism of St. Hildegard, because I was still working, as I said, for a Catholic diocese and parish. And so at that time, the intention was, to have this retreat center open to all faith traditions, et cetera, just to be able to bring Hildegard's charism to the wider world. And then when I discerned my call in 2018, 2019 to ordained ministry, we closed the retreat center and then reopened up we reopened as a church, but we preserved the shrine aspect, which is the Hildegard house, so that people could come and spend time here who may or may not be interested in Catholic liturgy or even religion, but have an interest in St. Hildegard.
Well, I am definitely putting that on my to visit place list, because just looking at it online, it looks so beautiful. And, you know, you're an inspiration in terms of being, you know, a Catholic and a woman and becoming committed to something that actually put you at odds with the church that you served for most of your life. And you walked forward and, you know, created something that's very integrative and bringing together aspects of not just Hildegard, but spirituality. And that is just commendable. So thank you so much for being our guest today on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Thank you. And if after, you know, we get off the line, if you would want to email me a mailing address, I'd be happy to send you a copy of Forbidden Grace for you to preview. And if you feel appropriate, maybe share in a link or something with this talk.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you, listeners, for joining us for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network. Hit that podcast button on your phone and download sort of an ongoing link to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. We have another show called Herbally Yours. They're both widely available on that podcast app. That's a new thing for me to learn about, although we've been doing these shows since 1987. So until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse at naturalnurse.com, hoping that you stay healthy.